Well, happy new year, everyone. This is Michael Moore. This is my podcast, Rumble with Michael Moore. And I was thinking about what to say to you today, tonight, or maybe it's already turned into New Year's Day, or it's New Year's week. This was some year, folks. This was a crazy year. And yet, I have a lot of crazy, weird optimism about the coming year, which means it could all go to hell in a handbasket, as far as I know. I mean, none of us know. We don't have a crystal ball. But I thought I would just end the year with just a quick recap of what we've been through, but what we may not have to go through in the coming year. In other words, we may find ourselves a bit surprised by the way things could turn around. I know a lot of you are not hopeful and you feel helpless, and I don't blame you, because there is at least a portion of every single day I feel that way. But usually by the end of most days, I have this sense of maybe, just maybe, we can turn this around. It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to be this way to each other. We could wake up. We could realize the job that we have in front of us and how we can actually accomplish it. You know, I have never been drunk. That's the God's honest truth. I'm not bragging about that. I'm not saying that I've been a good boy. I don't know why this thought came into my head today. Probably because, you know, alcohol is often involved on this particular day. And thinking about how I've never been drunk, which is weird, right? I mean, was I never young? Did I not live a life? How could that happen? Am I not Irish? I probably never really liked the taste of most alcohol. I mean, I've had a few beers, and I've been on that, maybe that borderline where I begin to see like, oh yeah, I get this. This is kind of like things are slowing down. I see. I feel a little less afraid. Maybe I'll say what I've been wanting to say, but have never said, and now I'm going to say it. So yeah, I've been sort of there, you know, but I know where the line is. And I know that I've never fell or tripped over that line. And mainly because I haven't been able to last long enough, whether it's a beer or whether it's liquor or whatever. I just can't get past the first few sips or the first glass or the first bottle or whatever without just feeling like, damn, I hate this. That's really all it is. And I'm saying this knowing that a number of you listening to this either have a serious problem with this, it's alcohol, or there are people in your family who do, or loved ones. There are people that may have died as a result of alcohol. Haven't I just described every family? At least somebody in your family, or your extended family, or your extended community, or your of friends and neighbors and coworkers and classmates. And we've all encountered this, and it's caused a lot of grief. So I don't mean to be glib about this, and I certainly don't need to sound like that person who says, hell, I haven't had COVID yet. Look at this. You know, it's like all the rest of us who've had COVID, or those of you who have had it two or three times or more. I think we all know what we've kind of all been through. And then there is probably, I think I read about 10% of the population that never got it and never will, just for whatever reason. Science doesn't know yet. And we don't need them in the room bragging about it, or like they have some special gene or some gift that they haven't received COVID. By the way, if you are one of those people that just have to tell everybody that you've never had COVID, and isn't that amazing? We're all just looking at you going, you know, with our kind of Mr. Spock glare, where we're doing a mind meld and going, you will get COVID tonight. Your next week will be wrecked. We're all looking at you thinking that, okay, just so you know. All right. So it's not that. But I don't know. I think maybe it is time that I get drunk. I think I will tonight. Not because I'm down in the dumps, not because I'm depressed about this year that we've had or what we see in front of us in 2024. I just have thought about that after the year we've just had, not that the alcohol would help, but I think maybe I should just throw caution to the wind. Get drunk tonight. Don't get behind the wheel of a car. Don't do anything that's caused harm to myself. But just, you know, just kind of blow the whole thing off. And wake up in the morning feeling, entering the new year in misery. The more I think about this, the more I think, you're not going to do this. This is not how you're going to spend New Year's Eve. But I'm just at that point, my friends. I really have reached a point, and I think a lot of you have reached it too, where enough is enough. Yes, I'm talking about you, Trump. And yes, I'm talking to you, the Israeli army. Shame. Shame on you. And I'm talking about a whole bunch of other things too. And I'm just going to get it off my chest here on this podcast. And then I'm going to close with some bright, happy news and hope that may or may not come true in the next 12 months. But I'll give you reason enough to continue marching forward here. But first, let me thank the underwriters of today's episode of my podcast. Starting with Shopify. As we launch into the new year, if you're thinking about starting up your own shop, whether it's online or a pop-up or in person, or maybe you're just looking to grow the existing one you have, check out Shopify. From the moment you launch until you're fulfilling your millionth order and beyond, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify is, of course, the global commerce platform that has helped millions of people across 175 countries, powering 10% of all e-commerce in the United States alone. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, payments from anywhere. Plus, they offer extensive help resources to support your success in every step of the way. So sign up for, get this, $1 per month. It's a trial period, just $1 a month at shopify.com/rumble. And make sure when you type in rumble, R-U-M-B-L-E, it's all in lowercase. Go to shopify.com/rumble, all in lowercase, rumble now, to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/rumble. And remember, rumble is all in lowercase. I also want to thank my other underwriter for this episode today, and that is Moink. A huge thank you to them. They're longtime supporters of my podcast, Moink. Now, I know that not all of my listeners eat meat, but for those that do, if you're anything like me, it's really important that you know exactly where this meat is coming from. And with Moink, you know that place is a small American family farm. All Moink farmers farm like our grandparents did. And I'm telling you, you can taste the difference. And you can feel good knowing that you're helping family farms stay financially independent from big agriculture. Moink delivers grass-fed beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. You choose the meat that's delivered in every box. Plus, you can cancel at any time. So keep independent American farming going by signing up at moinkbox.com/rumble. And if you do that right now, listeners of this podcast will get free ground beef for a year. That's 1 year of the best ground beef you'll ever taste, but it's only for a limited time. So Moink, that's M-O-I-N-K, like moo and oink. Just put them together. moinkbox.com/rumble. And thank you, Moink, for supporting this podcast and for supporting my voice. So, what we've learned in 2023, but maybe haven't quite grasped. I'm sure you've heard, you know, all these end of the year broadcasts, podcasts, stories in the paper, whatever, where they do the year wrap up and they say, here's what happened. So we know already a lot of the things that probably don't need repeating here by me, but I want to just set this up so I can get to the place where I want us to grasp what has happened, because I want us to have a better 2024. So there was a great headline in the New York Times yesterday or day before talking about how this was the hottest year on record, you know, temperature-wise. The warming of the planet is at an all-time high. We're already so far beyond a certain place that we never intended to be at this point in 2024. And here we are, really just years away from the point of no return, where we won't be able to fix it, we won't be able to stop it, and then we're just going to have to pivot and start finding ways to survive the catastrophe that we've caused. But the headline on the front page of the Times was, I should have this in front of me, but basically it said something to the effect of, yes, it was supposed to be the hottest year on record, but ... this hot? I'm sure some of you saw that. And then the story was about as bad as it was this past year, the damage we've done to planet Earth, it was really a lot worse than how bad we thought it was going to be. Do you get the feeling that it's like everybody kind of knows this now? And then we just move on to the next thing we have to do that day or this week or whatever, because really nothing really is being done about it. Don't you have that feeling too? It's like, yeah, we see all the stories and all the alternative energy stuff and this and that and whatever. Look at how many solar panels there are now. Look at all the windmills lining the ocean. And every year, right? More and more of these stories. And all these corporations have all gone green, and there's the electric this and the electric that and the lithium battery this and the nuclear power that or whatever. Every year we get these stories. Every day we get these stories. And yet, at the end of the year, we have a headline that says, not only has this been the hottest year ever, it's even way hotter than what we think it is. And that large swaths of ice are just melting in Antarctica, up in the Arctic region near the North Pole. And there's no way to put that ice back together. And so the warming is cooling the oceans, which is already having many of the disastrous consequences that we've seen just with what we call weather all year long. It's mind-boggling. I think we all feel collectively helpless, that there's nothing we can do. We've been snookered by corporate environmentalists. These are so-called environmental leaders who've made millions from all the things they've been selling us, all the crap, all the lobbyists, all the everything, and got us thinking that all these good things were happening. And while they may have been happening, I don't think we call them good things if we don't see the results. And the results are, it's worse every single year. And you've heard me say this over and over about, you know, I mean, I'm at an age where, you know, I was a teenager, but I was there at the first Earth Day, 1970. And it's like, what's happened since then? I mean, some good things did happen right away. You know, we had the Environmental Protection Agency formed. The Clean Air Act was passed, Clean Water Act. I'm not saying nothing's happened. But on the big issue, the number one issue, the extinction event that we're in the middle of, and I'm not talking about the trees and the whales and all the other things that we've made or are making extinct. I'm talking about ourselves. I'm talking about this species, humans. humans who have done this to their home. And it hasn't gotten better. And there's few issues that we all care about where we would say, wow, not only has it not gotten better in the last, 50 years, it's actually much worse. There are a number of things you could say that about. I know you're already thinking of what they are, but we also have made some progress in some of these basic things that we care about in this life. But not this. Not this. And we fool ourselves and we try to feel better about it all. We try to, and this year, 2023, will go down, I'm sure, as one of those turning points where we could have tried to turn things around, but we were listening to the wrong people. The wrong people were leading us on this issue. I'm not talking about the assholes from the oil and gas industry and all the others who work on a daily basis to wreck the planet. I'm talking about some of our liberal friends, quote marks around the word liberal, people that try to pass themselves off as those who are fighting the good fight to save this planet. They've wasted a lot of energy, a lot of our time. They've preyed upon our hopes, our fears, and our belief that we're smart enough to figure this out and stop the demise. That has not happened. And I think we've been bamboozled. I'm just one of those people. A lot of you, I'm sure, are the same way. You know bullshit when you hear it. Immediately you know it. Or at some point, you realize, wow, I have been bullshitted to for a long time here. I didn't realize it at first. They seem like good people. They had good ideas. Yes, this will save planet Earth. Whew. My friends, we are going to have to take the reins of this in our own hands to turn this around. And I will continue to make this a priority in trying to figure out the ways that we can do that as individuals and collectively in our neighborhoods and our communities, and how to do it politically on a large scale level by not listening to the BS anymore and standing up to those who are calling themselves the leaders of our environmental movement, when all they've done is gotten into bed with Wall Street, corporate America, capitalism, because there's money there to be made. And then there are windmills and solar panels and carbon credits. What do you do about a good idea once you realize it isn't a good idea? In fact, it's maybe the opposite. It's a really bad idea. And then what do you do when good people that you respect continue to promote the bad idea under the guise of it being a good idea? Wow. I know, that's a heavy thought, right? Because you kind of have a human responsibility to stop it. Stop the lies. Stop the BS. And stop leading us by the nose down the wrong road. In 2019, I helped my friend Jeff Gibbs, who directed an incredible documentary that over 20 million of you have seen now. It's amazing. You can still see, anybody wants to see it, they can see it for free on my YouTube channel. I'll put a link up if you want to go see it. It's called Planet of the Humans. I'm sure many of you have already seen it. The whole professional, corporate, environmental, capitalism movement attacked Jeff and me and anybody connected to this, because we wanted to tell you that maybe you were being led down the wrong path. and that there's something far more radical that we need to do to save this planet. And there's no time left. I know there's a lot of things going on in the world right now. There's a lot we need to deal with. But why am I making this the number one thing to talk about on our year-end show? Because is there anything really that's higher than our very lives on this very planet? And like I've said before, I think the planet will figure out how to survive us. It's us who aren't going to make it. Or if we do make it in our lifetimes, and if we can pull this off for 50 to 100 years, we're going to be living a miserable, miserable existence. And we're going to leave this place to our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and they're going to wonder, who the hell were these people? What's the answer? What's the note we're going to leave behind in the bottle? What's the video that we can put in one of those things, you know, the time capsule thing you bury and people open it up 100 years later? And we're going to have to leave not just the video, but also the machine, because they won't have the machines we're using today, so they can play the video. What would we say? What were we doing while the Earth was crashing, or while our species was creating its own eventual extinction? And I'll keep saying it, and I'll keep trying to think of a way or ways for all of us to do some good. Real good. Not phony baloney, crapaloney good. I'm not talking about little symbolic things that we can do to show that we love the Earth. I'm talking about real serious, hardcore work that we all have to do, and politically what we have to do to make this happen. And I'm committed to that. And I can't sit here today and tell you exactly everything and every step and how we're going to do this, but I'll tell you this much. I don't miss a day where I don't think about what it is we should be doing, how to turn this around, how to stop being on the road that we're on, the so-called green road that has made it worse every single year. And some people don't want to hear me say that, and I'm sorry. I should have been screaming it a lot louder a long time ago. I know you're thinking, Mike, what happened to the Happy New Year show? We're getting there. We're getting there. I just can't leave 2023 and not talk about how this has been the worst year ever for climate on this planet. And as we've said, as Jeff has said many times, part of our problem is that we keep calling it the problem climate. We keep wrapping it around this one word or this one idea when it's something different. It's about who we are and how we live. Just like when we talk about guns, that the NRA is kind of partially right when they say guns don't kill people, people kill people, because a gun cannot operate on its own. It needs a human being. So yes, the guns are a problem, and we need to do something about that, and I'm going to get to that in a second here, but doesn't it imply that we need to do something about ourselves first? Why are we, especially we as Americans, why are we such a violent people? Why don't other countries have this level of violence toward each other? Isn't that worth discussing, investigating? And so the other headline of the last day of the year here is, we've had more mass shootings this year than any previous year ever. and more gun deaths in general. And that includes murders, homicides, and especially suicides. Why is it the number one cause of death now for children? Guns. Gun violence. This is so upsetting and so immoral and so... And why us? Why don't the Canadians kill each other the way we do with guns? Or any of a number of other countries? And yes, just about every country will have their horrific moment of gun violence. Somebody will kill a lot of people in the Czech Republic. But to them, it's so shocking because it's so rare, because it essentially never happens. And here, it happens every single day. The Gun Violence Archive said today that there have been 652 mass shootings this year. 652. Unbelievable. And they happen everywhere. They happen in schools, obviously. They happen at work. They happen in shopping malls and churches and synagogues. They happen in homes where people live, where most murders are amongst people who know each other, not some stranger, not somebody randomly breaking into your house. We kill the people we know and love. Well, I made a whole movie about this, explaining how I think we ended up like this. But I've had 20 years to think about that since Bowling for Columbine. And I have a lot more thoughts now and a lot of new ideas of what I think we can do. I'm not going to discuss that on this episode today, but I will say that it's something that I have personally to myself committed to doing this year, that I should share these ideas on how we can decrease gun violence in this country. I think some pretty shocking, and shocking only because they might just be that simple. If we did X, Y, or Z, we could immediately bring this down. So that's a piece of, as I look to 2024, that maybe I'll be able to do. All the stuff about our democracy this year, a former president this year was arrested in at least one case, mugshot, fingerprinted, and told that he was being put on trial for trying to destroy our democracy, for trying to overthrow our democracy, for trying to overthrow an election. He's now facing 91 felony counts. And he is the front runner, candidate for the Republican Party for President of the United States. The front runner, the one that millions of people want back in the White House. And if you believe the polls, which I don't, and I encourage you not to, he's ahead of Biden. They're telling us he has a better chance than Biden of winning the election this year. Well, that should be enough to make you want to jump off the couch, head out the door, and do something, anything, to make sure that never happens. 2023 will be remembered as the year when, for the first time ever, a president or a former president was indicted on felony counts and faced multiple years in prison. But again, the piece of this that doesn't make me want to get drunk tonight is that, and you know, brace yourself, because I know a lot of you are very afraid, and I have been trying to talk to you about Trump in this since 2015, when I first tried to warn you about how this was going to go down. But by last year, by 2022, when we had our midterm elections, enough of you were listening to me by then when I told you that there was not going to be a red wave. The Republicans were not going to have some massive takeover of this country. And that turned out to be true. But that was because many of you got your friends and neighbors and family out to vote in not a presidential year, in a midterm off-year election. And you did that. And you did it in spite of the fact that the media and all the pundits and everybody was telling you that the Republicans were going to have the early stories where they were going to take over 50-some seats in the House of Representatives. On any given day, here's how much they control the House right now. And as you know, they don't do anything. They've really passed nothing. They can't get anything done. They can't even get somebody to run their own House, a Republican. But on any given day, it only takes four Republicans. This is like there's 435 members of the House. But on any given day, if just four don't show up or they're sick or they decide, you know what? I'm not going along with all these nutters here that are running the show in my party. I'm not going to do it. If just four Republicans out of how many are there, 221 in the House, change their mind or decide to run as a Democrat because they want to make sure they get reelected this year or quit or die because, you know, a lot of them are old. Just four. And all of a sudden, the Democrats have control. It's that close. So they haven't been able to do too much damage in the House because they don't really have any kind of a strong majority. They have a razor-thin majority. And very hard to work like that with that many people. You can see already how they haven't gotten along with each other. So I want to say to you that I need you to enter 2024 with this sense and a belief that Trump is not returning to the Oval Office. That's not going to happen. And these Republicans, they've cooked their goose. You've seen it already. In these off year elections in 2023, every time there's been an abortion question on the ballot, especially in red states, the voters have come out in large numbers to keep abortion legal. Time after time, in Ohio, in Kentucky, in Montana. These are not, you know, so-called liberal places. They may not have many liberals, but they have women. Women live in those states. Women are the majority gender. And nobody I know, regardless of what political stripe they are, likes the government telling them what they can do or not do with their bodies when it affects not the government, but it affects them, their lives, their family, who they want to be, how they want to live it. Really basic things. And the Republicans have taken the side against women. They are now the anti-women party. They are now the Republican Party want to control what you can do with your reproductive organs. How creepy does that sound? It's madness. And what I don't understand for the life of me is the Republicans, after even all these elections this year and the special elections for people. I mean, Democrats have been winning these special elections throughout the country in state by state all year long. You'd think some Republican would say, hey, I don't think we're gonna win in 2024 if we keep telling women we want our hands on their bodies. I don't know. I don't think that's a good position to take. I think some of them, I think, have got that, but they don't know how to stop the runaway train with Trump as the conductor. We're going to throw a number of them out in November. They know it. And I don't know what Trump knows, but Trump's not coming back. And that's because young people, they don't like any of this. They don't want the government pushing women around, abusing women like this, taking away their rights. They're angry about it. They're going to show up and vote. And if you put together the young voters that are going to turn out, the Black and Hispanic voters, Asian voters, all the minority groups that are going to vote in November, youth, women, people of color, that's your majority right there. That's your majority. I'll say it again. White men may look like they're in charge, and they are to a great extent still mucking up the world. But they, since World War II, the only Democrats that have ever been elected to the White House by winning the white male vote was Lyndon Johnson in the landslide of 64, barely a year after President Kennedy's assassination. He got the white male vote. And the only other time was Bill Clinton's second election. That's it. Every other Democrat that's been elected to the White House, from John F. Kennedy to Jimmy Carter to Bill Clinton in his first term to Barack Obama and to Joe Biden, every single one of those presidents I just named got elected to the White House by losing the white male vote. I know you're saying to yourself, that's not possible. Even though I've said it now for the last 15 years, I just want to keep saying it, folks, because they look scary. They are scary, but their bark is their bark, and they are not the majority of this country anymore. White men are not the majority. And they certainly, when it comes to voting, women vote by a higher percentage than men do. And white men, it hasn't mattered whether the majority of white men voted against Barack Obama twice. They voted against Biden in 2020. They voted against Kennedy and Carter. Didn't matter. All those Democrats were elected by getting an amazing percentage of women, people of color, and especially young people to vote. And that's what's going to happen this year. That's what's going to happen. And if Trump doesn't know it, well, then he's just the fool we think he is. But if we get out and work, we could do a lot of damage to really put an end to the white supremacy, patriarchy that still runs too much of this country. And yes, we have to talk about Biden and the war crimes that are being committed in our name with our money right now. And this is one of the saddest things that has happened here this year in these last, what is it now, 2.5, almost 3 months since the heinous massacre of Israelis on October 7th. And the response to that has been to commit atrocity upon atrocity, carpet bombing the civilians of Gaza. 70% of all the dead are either children, women, or the elderly. That's their targeted attacks on the people who committed the massacre on October 7th. There's been no targeting. This has been an excuse to wipe out a group of people, to either wipe them out or move them out. And you have to call it what it is. And let me tell you something. You know, you're right to want to support our Jewish brothers and sisters because they have been the victims of mass slaughter upon mass slaughter, not just in the last century, but for thousands of years. And you're right to stand up for them. But the best way, and I said this back when we invaded Iraq, people were all upset that Canada wouldn't join us in our invasion. France wouldn't join us, our allies, right? People were mad, especially at the French for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. Freedom Fries, remember that? Mad at them for what? That's the thing your best friend does. That's why you need a best friend like a Canada or a France, because it's only your best friend that can tell you you're fucking up. You're doing something wrong. This is a war crime. This is a crime against humanity, invading a country that had nothing to do with 9/11 and killing its people. That's what they told us. We didn't want to hear it. And if you want to, and I hope you do, support our Jewish brothers and sisters around this world. One of the best things, and this is what all the Jewish peace groups have been saying in Israel and in here in this country, the best thing you can do to help protect us is to stop this madness, stop this killing, stop the genocide, stop Netanyahu, help us throw him out. We can't do much about throwing him out. Well, there is one thing we could do. Stop bankrolling him. Billions upon billions of dollars of our tax dollars going to hurt this country. This country, the country of Israel, I'm not the first one to say this, am I? Or is it the people are afraid to say it? Because really, I think if you love Israel, is this what you think Israel should be doing? In your name, my name, with our money? Really? I don't think you think that. I know deep down you don't think that. I know you see how horribly wrong this has gone, that those hostages are still being held, if they aren't already dead from all the bombing we've done. Here's what I don't do. If you kidnap my grandmother and hold her hostage, and you're in some house or some place or wherever you're at, I do not want the United States Air Force to bomb that house. I do not want to put her life in risk because I'm trying to stay in office. I'm trying to avoid, as Netanyahu is, his felony indictments, his court trials that were supposed to have taken place by the end of this year. And now he's got an excuse to declare a semi-martial law. All this stuff is off the table now. All the fact that he was perhaps on his way to prison. And right now, even 82% of the Jewish, the Israeli citizens, want him removed. Large numbers of Jewish citizens of this country want him removed. First of all, he didn't protect them. We send all that money there to protect the people, and he pulled the army back. He sent them off to the West Bank to help the settlers, sent them up to the Lebanese border. Where were they that day? Where was the army? Where were the police? Why were people hiding for 14 hours? Well, I'm not the only one asking that. The Israeli citizens are asking that. Israeli newspapers have done a great job investigating what was really going on. The truth is coming out, and hopefully Netanyahu will be gone. But I have to stop here on this last day of the year and entering the first day of the new year and ask, what are we going to do about this? Because we've lost Biden. He's all huggy-wuggy, running over there, hugging Netanyahu, all this. Let's send more money. Let's send more bombs. Let's send whatever support we can. So the support is not supporting these Israeli people who, you know, have a right to live like everybody else does on this planet. he's guaranteeing more killing of Israelis, more killing. And I don't know what I know he's doing all these back channel things. I know he doesn't like Netanyahu. I know all the things I think that we've learned about this. And he's trying to control them. But he hasn't done a very good job of that. There's close to 22,000 dead people, dead Palestinians, civilians, children. And it's being done in your name, my friends, and my name, with your tax dollars and mine. And I am so distraught about this. And I know many of you are too. And I know, I mean, those of us who joined Jewish Voice for Peace, if you haven't joined them, you should. Jewish Voice for Peace. And support them. This is a worldwide organization, but it's mostly started here in this country. It started in California a number of years ago. You know, and they are Jews reaching out to us, non-Jews, asking us to please join them in stopping the slaughter, the madness, the apartheid, all of that. And I think we have a responsibility to do that. Because this can't go on. This has to stop. We're entering this new year with blood on our hands. Biden, President Biden, please. You are really the only person that has the power to stop it. Because if you shut the bank down, we're the bank, by the way. We're the bank for all this. Close the teller window at the bank. And that's going to be pretty much the end of that for a while. This has to be done. There can be no equivocation about this. The ceasefire has to happen now. And don't cloud the issue with, what about them? What about Hamas? What about, you know, they did their atrocity. And I hope those who participated in it will be found, not killed, found, and brought to justice. That's what civilized people do. In fact, that's what we did at the end of World War II with the Nazis. We just didn't walk up to each one of the leaders of the whole thing and put a bullet in their head. They actually got a trial. Not a show trial, a real trial. They got to have their own lawyers. The whole thing was televised. They got to say the most outrageous things from the witness stand about why they thought Jews were not human and why they had every moral right to exterminate 6 million of them. They got a trial. These Hamas people who went in there and did what they did on October 7th, there's no effort to capture them. Because we're too busy killing their families. Because, you know, that's what you do. When somebody commits an atrocity, you go, you know, it's like, let's say somebody, you know, from the Bronx broke into my apartment building here and, you know, killed my family, killed my neighbors, killed my friends. You know, there's hundreds in this apartment building killed by this team of people from the Bronx. Well, you know what we have to do then, if something like that happened? We have to go and bomb the Bronx. We have to go and kill the family members of these people, their friends, their neighbors, anybody that looks like they might be from the Bronx. Mow them down. Why? Well, because some people from the Bronx killed a bunch of people here in this apartment building. Who would think like that? Who would propose that? What is the difference between that and what is going on right now that you and I are running? We are the puppet masters, my friends. Don't put your head in the sand on this. And I know we are like powerless as individuals to do anything about this today. But how many of you are going to live with yourselves and tolerate this going on throughout 2024, 2025? How many more dead children can you handle seeing on TV? I bet you don't even watch it anymore. Turn it off. Stay away from it. It's gross. It's awful. It's sickening. Well, they had to die. They had to die because some people of this much larger group of people, the Palestinians, some of them committed an atrocity. Instead of going and finding and arresting those who committed the atrocity, let's just kill every one of them and anyone that looks like them. This is sick. You know it. I know it. And millions of Israelis, they may not be the majority, but there are millions who agree with what I just said. And millions of Jews in this country are working hard to turn this thing around, to stop the massacre. But we don't have the power, do we? And I hate the cynicism of the Democratic Party leaders, and especially of Biden, thinking because, well, what are we going to do this year? Not vote for Biden? Vote for Trump? That's our choice? No, nobody is voting for Trump that voted for Biden in the last election. Right? Let's just say that right out loud. Nobody's voting for Trump. So then what are you going to do? You know, a symbolic vote for a third party candidate makes you feel good, get the anger out. That'll teach them. I mean, please tell me there's an adult way to rein Biden in, to make him stop this, as opposed to the 13-year-old way of you're going to pay for this, Joe Biden. You're going to pay for this. You'll see. I did that so well because the 13-year-old in me feels exactly that way, because that is what I want to tell him. But if I'm allowed to be my mature self for a minute or two, we have to stop this, my friends. And for this being maybe the biggest catastrophe of 2023, how do we dare let it continue into 2024? No. Right? And I know, yes, we have a lot to do. Hottest year ever. More mass shootings than ever in this country. Everything else, the fact that Roe v. Wade, now gone, still hasn't been made the law of the land. How the rich this year got even more rich. The gap between those who have 9 slices of the pie and then the 10th slice, everybody's left to fight over. So many things we need to fix. They're still trying to ban books in schools and libraries. But this was a year also when unions rose up, when workers rose up and demanded things that they got. And that's just one of a number of examples I could give you here that tells me that people are willing to stand up and fight to make things better. There are still so many good people. I honestly believe that in the next year or two, that Roe v. Wade, that decision about legal abortion, will be a federal law. And like I said, I believe that Trump will not return to the White House. I believe we'll find new environmental leaders to get us on the right path. And I have such hope and faith that the future is already here, and that future is young, it's majority female, and it's of color. And the people who belong to these three groups will lead the way in turning this around. And those of us who aren't part of those three groups need to be their helpers, supporters, do what they need us to do. And whenever the people in charge try to distract us with things like the hordes of immigrants are coming across the border. You know, sometimes we have to really get radical in our thinking here. I would like to say to that, stop running those stories showing all these people on the road coming through Central America trying to get into the U.S. I say welcome. Welcome. Welcome, fellow Catholics. That's who they are, by the way. I know that there's a certain group of people in this country like to call them illegals. They look like they're mostly people from heavily Catholic countries. So I say to this Christian nation of ours, why are you punking on them? Why are you punking on thousands of Catholics desperate to get to this country? Because they'd like to work here. They'd like to work and raise a family. You tell me what the crime is in that? There are 11.2 million job openings in this country. In other words, there are over 11 million jobs that we can't fill because we don't have enough people. They just started what they call a Friday schedule now on the subway in New York City, where they're going to run less trains on Fridays. In large part because they don't have enough subway conductors. They don't have enough people to work in the MTA system here. I mean, you've seen it, no matter where you live. You know, in the little town, you know, where my apartment is and where I live half the time in northern Michigan. You go to the diner, the restaurant, and it's closed. It's got a closed sign on it. Why has it got a closed sign? Well, they're only able to be open 4 days a week now, or 5 days. Because there's nobody to cook the food. There's no fry cooks. There's nobody to wait the tables. On and on and on. They've had to tell the school kids last year in my town that they can only take the bus to school every other day because they can't find bus drivers. They don't have bus drivers. So they've told the parents, on alternate days, you're just going to have to get your kids to school. Every other day, we'll have a bus pick them up. But we don't have enough bus drivers to run school buses every school day of the year. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, right? You do live here. You do live in these towns and these cities. This is the America we have now, where we are missing or lacking 11 million people to be part of the workforce. And before, when we had the Industrial Revolution and the invention of the automobile and factories and this and that, whatever, at the end of the 1800s and early 1900s, what did we do? We flung open the doors. We had a thing called Ellis Island. It was just like, come bring everybody. Come on, we need help. We need workers. Yeah, I know. We had slavery for a few hundred years, but, you know, that was a great deal, by the way, right, folks? Nikki Haley, come on, tell us all about it. You see, slavery, the enslavement of human beings, was about being able to build this into the richest economy in the world. And we got our start by not having to pay labor. This country was built on the backs of slaves. The economy was built on the backs of enslaved human beings. And then we had to start paying people. Everybody got paid. If you work, you get paid. But we didn't see immigrants then, after that, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, as a threat, something to fear, something to be angry about. No, we were like, oh my God, thank you for coming to America. What, you can't speak English? No problem. We'll make sure you learn the language. Here, you need this? You need food? You need some kind of shelter? You know, tenements were built. Public housing was built. Food was made cheap. Things were done so that people could live here, work here, raise families, live a life. So stop with the distractions. I don't want to hear this anymore about all these hordes, caravans of illegals making their way to America. Please come to America. Please help us. I want to go down the street and get a hamburger at Bubba's. I need Bubba's open. I want everybody to have a job. I want them to have a good wage. I want them to have safe working conditions. I want them to have full universal health care. We can afford all this, could do all this. And if you got more people working and paying taxes, you got more money. And you make the rich pay the taxes that they haven't been paying for the past number of umpteen years. This is all going to change. That's the positive thing I want to leave you with, folks. It's all going to change. Why? Because women aren't going to take it. Because young people aren't going to take it. Because Black and Hispanic and Asian and Native American people aren't going to take it. Thank God. And let the white men, the pundits, let them all grumble about it. Let Fox News do whatever they do. They'll never be the majority in this country. Not going to happen. I know some of you don't believe that. I know some of you are scared. They're scary. I get it. But there's more of us than there are of them. There have been. It has been that way for a long time. And it will continue to be that way. And as for the people of Gaza, tonight, at the end of this year, I just want to say that I'm sorry. I really am sorry. What happened on October 7th was that morning I woke up to that news and I just broke down. But it wasn't long before. It wasn't just those 1,200 dead. It was a mass murder taking place that wasn't going to create peace. It wasn't going to fix the situation. Those babies, the babies that were in the incubators that they just had laid on some metal tray because the incubators had lost the electricity because the Israelis shut it all down. There was no water. They couldn't do operations. They couldn't do anything. And yet they've been trying to do them without all of that. And it's been done in my name. And it hasn't protected or saved a single one of my Jewish brothers and sisters. It has made them more scared and more endangered. And for this, all these babies had to die and are still dying as I say this. Whatever has to be done must be done to stop this, to stop our president, our Congress, to help our Jewish friends stop it in Israel, and to stop the lobbying here and the lying here. Okay. This is a rotten way to feel, ending a year like this and having the legitimate hope I do have for the year ahead of us. I know you've been listening to this long enough and thinking, Mike, you told us at the beginning you were going to get drunk for the first time. I probably now have made the case for why there should be no alcohol around me at all at this point. But I am sorry to all the children of Gaza, to their parents, to their grandparents, to all the people who are suffering tonight. Be a lot easier to maybe deal with it in my head if I wasn't funding it. But I am, and you are, those of you who are Americans listening to this. No more. No more. I really care deeply about this planet, the people who inhabit it. No matter who you are, no matter how much we disagree with each other, no matter what, this is not the world I thought I'd be living in all these years later. I thought I and my generation, we knew what we had to do. We figured it out. We knew what the big lie was. And we were going to take care of business. And we've done some good things. But nowhere, nowhere near enough. So over these next days and weeks, months, on this podcast and on my Substack column, I'm going to propose a number of things that we can do, real things, no BS, the real stuff that we have to do, and we can do it. We've pulled it off before. We can do it again. We just got to ratchet it up, my friends, because time is running out. Thanks for everything you've shared with me over this past year. I enjoy reading your comments and the emails you send me to my address. I read all my mail. If you send it to me at mike@michaelmoore.com, I listen to your voicemails. I thank you for all of that. I thank you for sharing these podcasts and these Substack essays with your friends and family. I appreciate all that. I know I'm not alone. That's a good feeling. It sucks to feel like you're alone. I'm far from that, my friends. Oh my God, the gratitude I have. So yes, I do have hope. Only because I've seen the results of this. And I hope that you've seen the results of the work you've done. I appreciate it. I pay attention. And I've learned a lot from many of you who've been active in so many things. So keep that up. Get 5 or 6 other people with you involved this year. Stay tuned to this, to my podcast, to my Substack column. It's all free, no paywalls. I know that together we're going to make some powerful things happen this year. We're going to fix a lot of the disastrous things that we did in 2023. I know this. And I thank you for, in your own way, making that commitment with me tonight as we enter this new year. I'm not kidding. I really do think that when I talk to you a year from now on this particular night, we're going to look back and see we did some amazing things. Things that we didn't even think were possible. Because the world looked like such a shitty place. And then it got a little better. And it just took a few people. It didn't take billions. 1,000 people can do an immense amount of good. That group of 1,000 people, well, I each know at least 10 people. And all of a sudden it's 10,000, and then that 10,000, it becomes 100,000. That's how it works. It has to start small. I know I sound like I need a Kleenex here. Sorry about this. Just give me a sec here. Oh, geez. We can cut that out. My thanks to my executive producer and editor. Speaking of cutting things out, Angela Vargas, thank you so much for your help in this year. Thanks to all my friends who participate, help what we do, especially to those of you who are already working with me on our plans for what's coming up in 2024, of what we hope to do to get out there to the rest of you. So more on that later. What am I looking for here? A bottle of Guinness? Oh, don't do it, Mike. No, Mike, no. Yes, I must. I must. I think we should crank up the New Year's music here and say a fond farewell, not so fond, to 2023. Let's take a look at 2024. It's coming right at us right now. It's staring us right in the face. It's daring us. It's got our number. It thinks we don't know what to do. We know what to do. We're going to do it. I'll leave it at that. Bless all of you. Much love from me. And I look forward to doing everything I can with you in this coming year. Peace, everyone. Be well.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne?
And here's a hand, my trusty friend, that gives a hand to thine. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne.
For auld lang syne, my dear,
for auld lang syne. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne?